Remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to, after he goes up a bunch of stairs, he takes his shoes off so we can rest the dogs. Alex Perkins, for KDN tonight.
I'm well, thanks. Yeah, I have foot problems, so yeah. You tear one ligament and you got to let the dogs breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just really happy they called them the dogs in this movie because
yeah.
I used to say that a lot and now I don't
dogs,
hear it anymore.
The dogs are barking. You know?
Dogs are barking. Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services as well as YouTube. You can give us a follow us on TikTok as well. And come watch the movies with us. Last week, we started our classics string with 12 Angry Men, which was, in fact, an absolute classic. And we followed Lee J. Cobb, juror number 3, to this week's picture, On the Waterfront. Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. So On the Waterfront is a 1954 joint directed by Elia Kazan, starring Marlon Brando and Eva Marie Saint. It is about a young retired professional boxer who comes back home and joins up working with a ship unloading in a labor union that's a racket run by his brother and Johnny Friendly, who's like been like a father figure to him. And, you know, they have to knock off one of his buddies and he's not too pleased. And he meets this girl and it's torn apart. And yeah.
And they're on the waterfront.
And they're on the waterfront. Just interesting. There's a lot of fun facts about this movie.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
One of them was that Marlon Brando had in his contract that he was going to be done every day at 4 o'clock for filming. So in the taxi scene, which is one of the, you know, strongest actor moments in the film, he shot all of his lines opposite Rod Steiger, who plays his brother, and a lot of the solo shots of Rod Steiger are when Brando's not there. So he was kind of pissed about that too, because it's like it's a courtesy to be there and record against your co-actor. In Marlon Brando's autobiography, he talked about how after first seeing the film, he was like devastated at how bad his performance was. It's just funny because artists are always like that. Like,
yeah.
You always have the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Never.
Was Streetcar before this?
I'm blanking. Yes. I think it was 51. Okay.
This is, I wonder 54. How he felt about that, like compared to this.
Sure. But, when casting the movie, Marlon Brando wasn't initially on board. So the director, Kazan, made a bit of a gambit where he filmed a test scene with Paul Newman to make Brando like jealous and like be like, nah, he can't handle that part. I need that part. And it worked.
Were they like rivals or was it just like a...
I think Newman was up and coming at the time and they just grabbed a guy and that guy did some pretty good things for himself.
Yeah.
And then right after the film came out, the AFL actually closed down the Longshoremen's Union because it was still run by the mob when the movie came out.
Well, I guess that's good.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. So, Perk, again, going into this movie, some of the last week, I'm like, how good can it be? Everyone says Marlon Brando's greatest actor of all time. You know, what's the deal? And once again, I really like this movie. I thought it was really fantastic. It's just cool to see old America, you know? Like, we're young. Like, we took history class and stuff. But, like, we don't get to see, like, a picture of it in, like, a, you know, very often. It was really cool to see just how things kind of worked and, you know, on the waterfront. And with, like, kind of the mob running things and the unions and stuff. And that was just, like, interesting of itself. And then I think performances are great. I think the chemistry between Brando and Eva Marie Saint is really, really good. Fun fact, this is her first movie performance. She's done, like, TV and shorts before. This is her first film.
Wow.
She did great in it. I love the priest character trying to, like, be like, yo, like, take your union back. Like, great, like, union messaging in this film. Like, yeah, it was just really good. I really liked it.
You reminded me, and I had forgotten to mention, but this movie won 8 Oscars.
Yeah.
It won 8. That's bananas.
Insane. So just absolutely insane.
To list them for you. Best picture, best actor in a lead role, best actress in a support role. Eva Marie Saint was actually entered as a support role as a ploy to kind of get her a nod because they thought it would be easier for her to get a nod.
And she won.
She got a nod and she won. Yeah. Best director, best writing, best cinematography for black and white, best art direction and set direction for black and white, best editing. So quite the tally of accomplishments.
Ran the gamut. Was there a separate color category? That's fascinating if that was the case.
Yeah, I assume there was because,
yeah,
like clearly there were some films that were in color at this point, right? I mean, The Wizard of Oz did color.
Yeah.
Like in what, the 30s? When did that movie even come out?
I don't know, but it's cool to think that there was a time when if there was both in their separate categories, the Oscars.
Yeah.
But.
So I was in the same boat where, you know, I didn't know anything about this movie. And like I've seen, we both blanked, but obviously Marlon Brando is the godfather. But
yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of almost like a smaller role, I would say. Compared to what he has to do here. Yeah. And in an entirely different time in his life.
Yeah.
So he won an Oscar for that. And this is his other Oscar winning performance. I get it.
He's
really good.
He's really good. I mean, it's hard for me to be like, he's the greatest actor of all time. But like, yeah, he's really good. Like, I'm not deny that for a second.
Yeah. This performance we're almost a little bit blessed to be coming into this older time period of films because with less familiarity with the actors involved, you kind of just believe them as a character more.
Yeah.
Cause I see Marlon Brando, I know who he is and I know his face.
Right.
But it's not like when you see Matt Damon in a Civil War epic or in Ridley Scott's The Last Duel. And it's like,
yep.
Matt
Damon,
take it
seriously, man.
Why are you here? That kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Brando entirely dissolves into the character for me. And I think he's mesmerizing. He's great. And yeah, I agree with you that, Eva Marie Saint is also deserving of her, award, and their chemistry is really good.
Yeah.
Which is not a given. It's hard to portray that on screen. So I was impressed with that.
Yeah, especially when they're first hanging out and stuff. Like, I think the ending gets a bit messy with him like breaking into her apartment to like kiss her on the mouth, and like that was a little bit weird. But like, everything before that,
fortunately, fantastic. You know, no physical violence. But
yeah,
it's still a little odd. I thought her character kind of took a backseat. Like she has ambitions and things at the start, and is really looking to find her brother's killer, but it's towards the second half of the movie, it's more focused around their relationship, which, as I said, I think it's a good relationship, well portrayed. But as a character, she kind of, you know,
I agree,
doesn't have much to do. But that's that's really like my only gripe. I love the story. I love it's a just kind of a small little mob tale that, you know, in a setting that I'm entirely unfamiliar with. I've never been in a shipping town, never seen people lining up for work, right? This is a whole different time period from anything that we know.
Yeah.
And it's it's pretty clean. It's not overly long. It just, it tells its story and gets along with it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So here comes the part, Perk, where I tell you why this movie was made, and things get a bit dicey here. So the director, Elia Kazan, before this movie came out, he was, I guess, a part of the Communist Party, and he basically snitched on other actors and artists who were in the Communist Party to the House Un-American Activities Committee, which, you know, not great, but don't love that. And then so the idea is, like, he made this movie to be like, no, I did the right thing. Like, it was good to, like, snitch, which is just very weird because, like, I think this movie, I think, like, without knowing that, I like the themes a lot and I like the story and the message. Like,
yeah,
you know, protect yourselves and protect your union. But it kind of, like, if he's, like, kind of standing in as Brando's character, it's like, well, that's not what you did. Like, no. you ratted on your fellow artist. So, like, there's a bit of muddiness surrounding this that, like, I was like, I like this movie. And I read that. I'm like, oh, now I'm trying to see it just as a standalone film, but it's hard to, like, separate those two things, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting twist to it. I'm really glad that I got to watch. Excuse me. I'm glad I got to watch it without that context.
Yeah, same.
Because I think it works really well, and it has the right messaging if you don't apply that, you know, stop acting against self-interest, and, you know, a lot of that's even still applicable, 70 years later. So yeah, basically I think that without knowing that context, the film works really well. With knowing that context, it's a little weird to see, like, him insert himself and portray himself as Christ-like, which they do on several occasions.
Yeah.
Which I think is, there's some good symbolism leading towards that, you know, Christ-like nature, but, you know, a cut in his hand and his walk up the dock kind of feels like carrying a cross. But it taints the message a little bit knowing that it's this guy being like, hey, look at me. I'm actually a good guy because I ratted you out.
Yeah. And so I don't want to, like, ruin the movie, but I want to bring that up because I was looking at Letterboxd after, like, 3 stars, like, 2.5, what is it? And I was reading the reviews like, oh, okay, interesting. But, you know, just want to mention that. But going back to the movie on its own, I guess, and, you know, imagery stuff. I didn't catch the Christ stuff at first, but one thing I did just catch that was really powerful to me was, like, at the end when he does get beat up, you know, behind, like, the shack, and you see all of the longshoremen, you know, watching. It's like, there are 5 people that are, like, in control. So, like, you guys could take them, man. Like, you have, like, I feel like you really see, like, the power in numbers, or just, like, the numbers they had. And it's like, you guys can take it, you know, like, you don't have to submit to these, like, 5 people in control or whatever. But I think they did a good job of, like, portraying the fear and, like, the D&D, right? It was dumb and deaf.
Yeah.
Kind of culture and stuff. So, yeah, like, you understood why everyone was doing what they were doing. And, like, I love the passion of the preacher and, like, him getting called out for just, like, being holed up in his church. It's like, all right, fine, I'll come out and see what's going on and try to actually help people. And it was really good.
I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. I don't know. He might have been another Oscar winner, but that I thought for what is kind of a small role, he was giving it his all and did really well. Same with Lee J. Cobb as Johnny Friendly. He's delightful as like the mob boss bad guy. He plays it perfectly, and he also doesn't have too much screen time, but his presence is felt throughout the movie.
Yeah, he kind of did some similar things to his role in 12 Angry Men, but, like, I feel like you could tell he was having fun with this character, and I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
And he does the mob boss thing of, like, hey, I'm your friend, right? Like, I took you to ball games, and you get why Terry is, like, kind of torn, you know?
Yes.
It's with Brando's performance, like, he does such a good job of showing that internal conflict and, like, how he, you know, is this, like, tough guy boxer, but he's got, you know, a good heart. And we see that, like, when he takes, what's the girl's name in the movie?
Edie.
He takes Edie to, like, the bar, you know, and she kind of starts crying and he tries to comfort her. He's like, I want to help, but I can't. Like, Brando absolutely kills it, like, showing, like, fully realizing this character and all, like, different facets of him.
Yeah, he's very in control of his emotions, and especially too when they kind of bubble up in the back half of the film. I was wowed. Yeah.
What'd you think of the score by Bernstein?
I thought it was good. I thought it was fitting. It kind of falls into the category for me of not sticking out in a good way. Like it just kind of felt like it fit on most occasions.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured to ask you. You're more the music guy than me, and that's all. It's also just interesting because Maestro has been coming out, and that's the hot topic right now.
When I saw that in the credits, I'm like, oh yeah, Bradley Cooper, yeah,
he did it. Honestly, I don't have too much more to say just because I didn't take notes on this movie because I was just pretty locked in, honestly.
Sure.
The sense of place was so good.
It's so good. Yes.
We said this before, but I just miss you can tell everything's real, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like these days it's okay, is this actually real or is it CG or is there some trickery going on? It's back then, everything was real. It looks good, you know. And
I took a few, just a couple notes. The one thing in the movie that hasn't aged immaculately well is the mannequin getting tossed off the building right at the start. it's pretty much a Wilhelm scream, and then a dummy just gets tossed and it's and I giggled a little bit. So that wasn't perfect, but whatever. I really like the lighting. I feel in black and white, you can play with lighting. So in so many different ways. And I thought the way they lit this film, I thought was great.
Yeah.
I thought when he comes clean to Edie in the in the shipyard, I thought that the use of the use of horns, ship horns, to obscure what's going on, I thought that was great.
I'm the opposite.
Okay.
But you go first. You say why you liked it, and I'll say why.
I just like it because it's like a peak and an overflow and an emotional climax to the point where the emotions are so loud that it's feeding back in within the movie.
Did you get the impression that she heard everything he said?
Yeah.
Or not? Okay, because I didn't. I got the impression that he said, I was there, or I, set it up, and then the horn was going, and she didn't hear all the rest of the details, and, that's why she was more mad at him.
Okay.
And I fucking hate that trope. That's a trope that happens relatively frequently, and it's, when it's just, a miscommunication thing, and that causes conflict, I fucking hate that. But if you think of, she did hear everything, and that was to emphasize the situation, I like that more. But it just, I thought that's what was happening. I did not like it.
Yeah, my read on that was that it was they were just obscured from us. We were the only ones who were out on that conversation. But
gotcha.
I mean, we don't know. You could be right, in which case, it's a lot weaker for sure.
Yeah.
And then I really liked the scene at the end where he's walking up the dock. I just thought that was shot really cool with the close up face, and then with the wobbly fuzzy shots.
The first person
POV.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. That's all I got.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I think I will say the car scene is famous. It didn't hit as much for me because I could have been a contender is kind of a meme now. So it's it didn't fully hit.
I could have had class. I'm just glad that I actually now have seen the movie and seen from which that line comes, because I say that nonsense all the time.
Actually, what I think I like more than that scene, just because it's kind of similar, is when the guy with the dogs are barking is up talking to him at the pigeons, and he's like, what was going on in that fight? You know, and
that's a good scene too. Yeah.
And Terry's like, I fucking had a man. You can tell the passion he had for boxing, and because of the situation, his brother and everything, he couldn't fully realize his potential. I think that's almost stronger at showing that story beat for him, as opposed to him just saying I could have been somebody, you know. It's kind of more shows it, you know.
You can definitely feel his passion coming out when he's talking through the fight. And he's like, I was holding him up for a round and a half.
Yeah. Also, fuck that kid for killing all the pigeons. What the fuck was that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that was clearly in retrospect, that's the director saying, see, this is how bad you are for not squealing.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, On the Waterfront holds up. definitely worth the watch.
Yeah, people. It holds up supremely well. These like more dialogue, character driven features are just great. I think we've gotten back past like, because there's just a giant trench of muddy garbage CGI, and we're far enough back now that they're not even trying like practical effects.
Yeah, it's just people, man. Do you have any like recommendations? I was trying to think of other like Union Strong kind of movies, and the only one I could think of which doesn't really count is in Spider-Man 1 when the guy goes, "You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us." But I don't think that really counts.
So right off the top of my head, I thought of The Town, which is a tremendous movie that I need to rewatch soon. But basically the premise is excuse me, the main character is Ben Affleck, and he and his brother, Jeremy Renner, which is Jeremy Renner's best performance, and it's a shame he wasn't recognized for it.
But you haven't seen The Hurt Locker, have you?
No, I guess I haven't. So.
All right, so don't be saying stuff.
I can't be saying stuff. All right, Jeremy Renner's good in The Town.
I haven't seen the Town, so you know I'm also speaking out of ignorance.
But he and his brother, they rob banks, and they rob a bank in particular, and they take one of the tellers hostage. And then as the movie unfolds, Ben Affleck falls for that woman that they took hostage. And so it's kind of a same type thing where it's like, I can't tell you, you know, what I'm involved with because it involves you, that kind of a thing. So
that's what
came to my head. And I mean, I think Ben Affleck directed that. He might have been inspired by something like this for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I also think Rocky was inspired by this. Just like the aspects of Rocky's character and Terry's character, I think there's a lot of similarities there, being a bum, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah,
that'd probably be a good watch as well. That is our review of On the Waterfront. I will reveal it, watch it next week at the end of the episode. Before that, it's a bonus review time, and Perk, I got a lot to dump on you. All right,
I apologize,
but you're
ready.
All right, you want the movie first or all the anime first?
Give me all the anime.
All right. So every season I like to do this little survey. I'm like, what's coming out this season? You know, what are the hot shows? What do I want to be checking out? You know, and there were three that caught my eye. First one is a Netflix anime. You know, they're doing a pretty good job, like buying some rights to some. And so they have a pretty good catalog now. But it's called Delicious in Dungeon. This is another kind of D&D inspired anime where you have a party going through a dungeon. It's kind of like a roguelike type vibe where if you die, you like pop back out somehow.
Sure.
But it's a cooking anime. So it's about killing the monsters and figure out how to cook them and, you know, eat them because they don't have enough money to buy food.
Yeah. I love that as a mechanic.
Yeah. It's a really fun premise. It's a very like comical, like fun show. They meet this like warrior cook guy who joins a party. He's like, oh, I've been cooking monsters for 10 years. So he's kind of the experienced one, but it's nothing like super incredible, but it's really fun. Studio Trigger did the animation, and they just did Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which was phenomenal. So it looks great, fun. If you like D&D or cooking, you know, type shows, it's a great time. So that one's on Netflix. Second one is called Solo Leveling. So this is probably the most hyped anime of the season. It was a Korean manga or manhwa, I think is the term, that was like super highly regarded, finally getting animated. And so I'm like, okay, well, I got to check it out because everyone's talking about it. I've watched three episodes. I know now like what the twist is or what the mechanic is, and I'm not fully sold, Perk.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Minor spoilers for Solo Leveling, you know, if you don't know anything, but they say what this is in the description of the show. So another situation, real world. And then one day portals open and fantasy monsters start coming into the real world, right? And at the same time, some people awaken powers. And when you awaken powers, that's it. Like you get set at a certain power level. You can't like train to get stronger. You just, whatever you are is what it is. So people are ranked like S through E rank or whatever, you know. Main character is like an E rank, weak little guy, goes into a dungeon and there's some weird shit going on and he gets killed. Normally he would just be dead, but instead he like, now he comes back to life and he can like see the matrix basically of like, you know, what's actually going on. And essentially it's a video game. So every day he gets like a daily quest of like, you have to do 100 pushups, 100 sit-ups, run 10 miles, whatever. And then if he completes it, he gets like a reward that's like full recovery. Like he gets his health back and stuff, whatever. And so he can like train to get stronger and like fight back the monsters or whatever. And here's my hesitation. I don't like anime where one, it's like a person from our world, like modern world, that just like gets into a video game or like gets video game like abilities. Cause like, if I want that, I'll just play a video game myself. Like, I don't want to see someone else do that because it's just kind of boring to me.
Yeah.
Also, I don't feel like this character has like done anything to earn the like right to become stronger. Like, if you watch other like shonen anime, the classic thing is you got a character who's like weak and they have a goal and they work towards it to get stronger. Like Naruto, My Hero, One Piece, everything, all that stuff, you know. And most of the time, those characters are pretty like active, like they're actively making choices to like progress further. This character in Solo Leveling is very reactive. Things are happening to him, not because of his own actions, just because of where he is. And so I don't feel like he like necessarily deserves the power he's gotten so far. So like the combo of the reactive character plus the video game mechanics, I'm not fully in love, but I'll keep watching it because everyone's super hype on it. Maybe it has a big twist. I don't know. But that one, I'm kind of eh. Last one is called Metallic Rouge. This one perk I was not expecting to like. I saw the trailer and I'm like, this seems just too much like Blade Runner. I don't think it's going to be unique enough. Started watching it and perk, I'm all in. This okay. is my favorite anime of the season so far. They're taking every like sci-fi cyberpunk trope in the book and just throwing it in here. And actually, I like it because this is like, you know what? Just throwing the holy kitchen sink. You got, you know, the robot people. You got like, and they have, they literally quote Isaac Asimov. They got the Asimov code programmed in so that they can't hurt humans. You got cyberpunk-esque like body enhancements and like just character designs. You got aliens. There was an alien war, you know, a few years ago. Like they're just throwing every sci-fi thing in, which is, you know what? It's fun. The main character is a robot girl who is like tasked with finding the like super evil robot people that can like power up and do like a Power Rangers transformation. And she can too. So it's just like, all right, find the person, have a Power Rangers like mech kind of fight. And then she wins. And it's like, you know what? This is fun. And she has like a handler that they have a good rapport with. So that's one I was expecting probably the least from, and I'm actually having the most fun with, because it's just kind of, it's a fun time, great animation, and, you know, fun sci-fi stuff. So those are the three seasonal anime I'll be watching, and I'll maybe give another like roundup at the end of the season, see how I ended up liking them all. But that's kind of the rundown for now. One more quick anime thing. So the writer of One Piece, Ichiro Oda, before he wrote One Piece, he wrote other manga, you know, before getting a start. One of them was a one-shot story called Wanted that had a character that was then referenced in One Piece later. So it's like, okay, was this canon or not? Like, what's the deal? They finally animated this story, and it's called Monsters. The thing was called Wanted. It was in. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
So they animated it. It's called Monsters. 103 Mercies, Dragon Damnation, whatever. It's called Monsters. Netflix animated it. It's just one episode. You know, it's 20 minutes. So you can watch it.
Oh, really?
It's basically a prequel to One Piece about this one character. It takes place probably like 300 years before the events of One Piece. I would say it's fine. It's a fun little story. I would say if you're a One Piece fan, definitely watch it just for the context. Otherwise, you know, if you have 20 minutes, you could check it out. But it's a fun story about a samurai going into a town and there's some stuff going on. And there's supposedly a dragon coming. It's going to kill everybody. But what's actually happening, kind of a thing. But yeah, it was just fun to see that finally and get confirmed it is canon. Like they, at the end of the episode, they like directly tie it to One Piece. So it was just nice to kind of to get that kind of confirmation. So that's all the anime stuff.
All right.
Last thing is I watched Self-Reliance, the new Jake Johnson picture. Burke, I'll be honest, I'm kind of obsessed with Jake Johnson right now.
All right.
I found out he has a podcast and I've been absolutely loving it. It's hilarious. I loved him on New Girl. I love him in Spider-Man. Like, I love this man.
I think he's terrific.
Like, he's just the best. So I wanted to watch his movie. It's his first directorial debut, and he's also starring in it. So this movie is about a guy who's just, like, kind of in a rut. You know, his longtime girlfriend broke up with him. His job's boring. You know, he's kind of gets up, does the same thing every single day, and it's kind of lonely. One day, he's walking home from work, and Andy Samberg playing himself pulls up in a limo. He's like, hey, he's like, are you Andy Samberg? He's like, yeah. Do you want to get in a limo? And he's like, sure. Gets in and he gets offered to compete in a dark web reality TV show where he will be hunted by, you know, killers for 30 days. And if he can survive the entire month, he will get $1 million. The trick is, as long as he is with somebody, like within 3 feet of somebody, he cannot be killed. So he hears this. He's like, let's fucking do it. And he's like, he eventually says, like, you know, he was just lonely. He figures it was a good way to kind of meet people and force himself to be around people, you know. And so, yeah, the movie is then him trying to survive this game. And he meets Anna Kendrick, who's kind of like a love interest kind of character. And Biff Whiff from I Think You Should Leave.
Biff. I love Biff.
He's a major character. And he's the best. Like, he's nice. So good. This movie is fun, man. It's such a good time. Like, I could watch Jake Johnson and Anna Kendrick and Biff do anything for, you know, hour and a half. I've seen some criticism about the ending, and I kind of agree with it. Kind of like thematically doesn't really resolve anywhere. Like, it is like after this movie, I'm like, was there like a message? I don't really think there was, but it was just a fun movie and a fun story. And like, there's cool cameos and stuff. And, you know, if you want a fun half, like hour and a half, give it a watch. You know, it's a great time. So I don't think it's going to be like one of my favorites of the year, but I love Jake Johnson and I had a really good time watching Self-Reliance.
Nice.
Yeah. You said, ever have time for it.
You said 300 feet from a person.
Three feet. Sorry.
Three feet. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was going to say 300 feet. I live in an apartment building. I'm good.
Yeah. Like there's, cause he has to like sleep in bed with somebody basically, or else, you know, he could be killed in his sleep. So there's some comedy around that. And yeah, I think he did a great job. I think there's actually some really cool cinematography in it as well. Like, I think this is a good directorial debut. He has said on his podcast he doesn't really want to make another movie. Like, this is the movie he wanted to make, and now he's like, all right, I'm good now. But if he made another one, I'd watch it. So,
good to hear. Yeah,
that's Self-Reliance. All right, Perk, before we end here, let's just do a little bit of a reaction to the Oscar nominations. Those came out today. We'll be doing a more of a predictions kind of episode nearer to the Oscars actually airing. We just want to do just a quick overview of what we think of the noms. Perk, any big surprises or snubs or anything you want to mention off the top?
Yeah, so I think the biggest like eye-catching surprise at first that I saw was Sterling K. Brown getting nominated for American Fiction. I'm happy with that. I think he was great.
Yeah.
There are a few interesting ones, like in the directorial category, they gave Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest and Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. I figured it was probably going to be one or the either. One or the other. And I hate the fact that all of this has happened before I can watch Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
It is not available. Like, looking at the Best Picture list, I think there's a lot of good shouts. I've already seen 8 out of 10. So I'm at a good head start. My problem this year tends to be the same as my problem every other year with the Oscars. It's the Oscar bait. Cause we can't look past the Oscar bait, man. I mean, okay. So Maestro got like 9 or 8 or 7 or 8 noms for Maestro, which is a movie that from what I've been hearing from people who've seen it, they just don't like it. I'm going to watch it. I do think I'll enjoy it. I've liked the trailers I've seen. But it's like, this movie is getting all these noms because they put a huge push behind it. And I hate that that's how it has to work, but that's how it has to work. Whatever. I'm going to hate watch Naiad. I'm going to watch Naiad. I'm going to hate watch it because it got 2 acting nominations for very good actors. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Jodie Foster and Annette Bening are incredible actors, but it's like, this is like an inspirational sports movie that we're just going to throw in here because it got an enormous push for the award circuit. Like, the 4-year consideration on this was immense, which whatever, it just shows that the process works, but I'm just, I don't know. And I haven't seen it yet. So I will weigh in after the fact, but like Annette Bening is in for best actress over like Greta Lee for Past Lives or Margot Robbie, who was snubbed for Barbie, which is crazy.
Pretty nuts. Yeah. Also, no Greta Gerwig for Best Director, which is kind of crazy.
I'm upset with that, too. I think
Yeah.
She is fantastic. And at some point you're going to have to just nominate her for best director.
Yeah.
What better could she have done in this one?
Yeah.
But
this year made me think, like, we need to give more noms for best director, like expand the category. Like, five feels like not enough.
I think five
maybe
is
just
very,
for this year, but
very arbitrary in a lot of cases. And in a lot of times you're going to, I think it's just, it is lame. It, like, they finally expanded best picture to 10, which is cool, but kind of leased the limits a little bit. So you can get a little more recognition for like a Greta Lee, who's not going to get it.
Yeah.
And then another surprise, which, America Ferrera got nominated for best supporting for Barbie.
Yeah.
I think that's insane.
I agree.
Okay. She's really good. And she has a fantastic monologue, but they're nominating her for that monologue. Like
not for the whole picture, which she's fine the rest of the movie.
She's good. But it's like, wow, there are some people that probably should have been in here. And you know, good for her. She can't do anything other than act what's in front of her. So,
but it's like the fact that she got nominated and not Margot Robbie is just like nuts.
Yeah. You gave nominations to Gosling and Ferrera, but not Robbie.
Yeah.
Weird. I don't know. I just don't understand where even, because watching the press circuit, America Ferrera has been not present in all that stupid promotional stuff that I eat up, but just kind of a groundswell. I don't know. But that category supporting actor looks like Divine Joy Randolph's to run away with.
I'm okay with, man. I really hope she wins.
I hope so as well. In best actor or best female actor, I have to still watch Maestro and Naiad, but it hurts to see like Annette Bening get in there for a sport movie when there's so much good to be recognized. I mean, a lot of my picks for who I would think should win got nominated, so I can't be mad about that.
Are you gonna watch May December?
Yeah. So that the surprising part about this one is how many like just straight up snubs there were at this awards. Like nothing for May. Well, screenplay.
No, they got one thing. Yeah, they got screenplay. Yeah,
screenplay for May December.
No Charles Melton, which that was the hot. Charles Melton was best supporting.
Bummed about that. Nothing for All of Us Strangers, which I actually want to see that more now that it's been snubbed.
I saw a trailer.
It looks fantastic.
How the fuck did All of Us Strangers get nothing?
Yeah.
Like, that is
nothing
nuts.
At all. Nothing for Ferrari, which is a huge budget. Mm-hmm. Michael Mann. Like, Penelope Cruz apparently is just fantastic in it. I haven't seen it. It feels like there were a lot of movies around the award circuit that just got straight up nothing.
Yeah.
And then Maestro gets like 8 awards. And I get it. You know, the people who vote on this are the people in the Academy. They're going to love Academy people like Bradley Cooper.
But doing a Leonard Bernstein biopic. Yeah,
right. But I can't stand the biopic culture. But I think the biggest surprise to me was just the lack of anything. I mean, like nothing for Saltburn either, which I'm really glad I don't have to watch Saltburn. Nothing for Bo is Afraid, Dream Scenario. It seems like a lot of the challenging movies kind of just, I don't know. They like to play it safe. Nothing for Iron Claw because A24 absolutely, they bundled it. They absolutely threw.
Did that get pushed or was it always planned
December? No push.
Did the release date get pushed?
I don't know. That's a good question. But you absolutely could have, if you pushed it the right way, you could have gotten Zac Efron on the nom for best actor.
Yeah.
Which I still have to see that movie. You know, any of the supporting cast. But and then you could call it a snub because I think the Academy just has this. There's almost like an agreement like, I'm sure someone else will vote DiCaprio in. Right. And then everyone just kind of forgot, but he's tremendous in Killers of the Flower Moon.
What do you think of De Niro getting nominated?
I thought he was very good as well. I'm surprised that DiCaprio doesn't get the same kind of just like legacy nod.
Hmm.
Like, but I thought he was good. I don't think he should win. I think that should go to, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or Mark Ruffalo or something like that. But it's just interesting to see, like, I think that some of the reasoning I was seeing online is like people are challenged by Leonardo DiCaprio's character's motives because he's an incredibly complicated character and also the villain and also the protagonist.
Yeah.
So people, they just want things to be simpler. I don't know. And then I suppose the most disappointed I was with the category was score. Because John Williams got a score nomination for Indiana Jones 5. Really? He's announced his retirement, so it's like, oh, let's give him the send-off nomination. But guys, there was so much good music. Nothing for Joe Hisaishi for Boy and the Heron.
Nothing for Spider-Verse either.
I would have liked to see Past Lives up there. Excuse me. That was a weak category for me. And I mean, some of the good ones got in there. Like, I think Oppenheimer was in there.
Oppenheimer, Poor Things, American Fiction.
Yeah. I love that score. I'm glad it got noticed.
American Fiction had way more noms than I was expecting.
I'm glad movie Sterling was great. K.
Brown. Yeah, it was great. I was pleasantly surprised.
Cord Jefferson got a screenwriting nomination too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you kind of said a lot of things I was thinking that I'm pretty annoyed that for animated, Elemental is in there, but Ninja Turtles didn't make it.
Yeah.
Like, come on. You can't just be given Disney Pixar the nom every single year. Like, I haven't seen Elemental, but I cannot imagine it's better than Ninja Turtles. Like, that movie is fantastic.
So we're gonna see, because I have a very short list of movies I have to watch because I'm so far ahead. But I only have like 5 majors and then a few peripherals. Like, I might try and watch May December, even though it's only got one nod. But there are 3 animators that I haven't seen. You watch Nimona. I imagine that'll be good, so I might check it out.
It's good. Yeah.
I'm just not inspired to watch Elemental, man. I think I can just conclusively say, without seeing Elemental, that I liked Boy and the Heron more than
it. I mean, Boy and the Heron's going to win that category, let's be honest. I don't think there's any way it doesn't.
I sure hope so, but you never know. They might not see it because it's in Japanese.
There's no way Elemental wins that category. That's fair. I don't think you gotta watch it.
I probably won't. But yeah, I am at least pleased with how far ahead I am. Unfortunately, so much of my remaining list is just biopics, but whatever. I'll do it for the good of the cause.
How are you? Like, you're probably not excited, but how are you feeling about seeing Zone of Interest?
I actually am excited about seeing Zone of Interest. Okay. From what I've gleaned from just like some clips and stuff, the direction looks incredible. So that one I'm excited for. Coleman Domingo got nominated for Rust and they were pushing that really hard, so I'll watch it. It's a good story at a minimum. And then I also there was supporting female actor for Color Purple, so I'll try and watch that too. I don't like musicals. We'll see.
Yeah, the last thing I just want to mention is I'm just so happy that Godzilla Minus One got a nom for visual effects. Would have liked to see more noms for it, but I think it's honestly got a chance in that category.
I hope that they run off with it, kind of like what RRR did with Best Original Song.
Yeah.
Because like RRR should have been in the conversation for international feature. But
if Godzilla Minus One wins visual effects, that is such a challenge to Hollywood. It's of just the
spitting
budget-wise.
In the face of the... Yeah. You know, $300 million blockbusters that have 250 person CG teams. And it's like, hey, we did it for like 10 million.
Yeah. Like, you guys don't have to go that hard because it also doesn't look that great a lot of time anyway.
No. Trim the fat.
But yeah, because the other noms are The Creator, Guardians 3, Mission Impossible, and Napoleon.
The Creator also has a relatively modest budget.
Yeah. And I didn't end up seeing it because the reviews ended up being bad, but the production design and like just the look of it looked really good. I could see Creator winning. I don't know Napoleon what they did with that, but I don't want Mission Impossible to win that category.
I'd rather they didn't.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll go over all of our predictions and all that stuff later before the awards. But Yeah, I think overall, like, I think what this just showed is, like, this was stacked year.
Yes.
Like, this was actually a very, very good year for movies.
Also, I think there's the potential inklings that the Oscars are moving in the right direction, even if slowly.
Very slowly.
Because the fact that something like you can get something like Past Lives on the ticket for Best Picture is so cool. Because even 5 years ago, there's no chance. None at all. It would have been like 7 biopics and then 2 war epics, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That is our show for this week. Thank you, everyone, for watching and or listening. Next week, we are doing another absolute classic banger, which is Rear Window. Our connection is, in fact, Leonard Bernstein. He was on the soundtrack. Well, he did the music for On the Waterfront, and he's on the soundtrack for Rear Window. So Perk's first Hitchcock movie, which is, or maybe second.
Second, seen Psycho. Right. Oh, I've seen Psycho. Yeah.
And I haven't seen Rear Window in a really long time. So that is available on the Criterion channel if you have it. And if not, you could rent it. So next week, Rear Window on Criterion or rent. But until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.